You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO Palm City.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
Did you know that in order to become an ordained minister, all you have to do is count backwards from five?
No.
Dave, I'm impressed.
But Lou, that's an advanced ministry.
It's an advanced ministry. 1-888-221-8990. Now, this is an important thing. I just told you.
Write it down, Joe.
Class, that number is supposed to be sitting next to your phone, and it should be a permanent thing. If it's not, it should be stenciled on the inside of your eye, so that way you can always see the number, because we are here to help. We are here to educate. And that number is a critical one, because if you want to find out some information, you got to call that number.
Then what is that number, Joe?
Kind of a coincidence. One. Now, the reason you have to dial one, unless you're on a cell phone, you don't have to dial one.
That's correct.
But from your home phone, you got to dial one.
Yep.
1-888. Dave, did you know these rules?
That was not part of my curriculum.
Curriculum.
No. Counting back from
didn't
five.
Didn't need to learn that, only counting back from five.
1-888-221-8990. So what we have today, we've got Vince Rosino, CPA, whose eyelids are just half
masked. We're just half-masked right now.
If he falls asleep during the middle of the show, you have to understand, he did the midnight oil for...
Good 12 weeks. Yeah.
I mean, big time. We also have a guest star today.
Oh, yeah.
A retired securities advisor, a semi-retired attorney, prosecuting attorney, who has a store named after him in Georgia, I hear.
Named Love. Right?
There are many stores. There's a liquor store in my former hometown, Milwaukee, named Love also. Love Liquor.
You never know.
You got to love liquor.
You got to love liquor. So
is that your slogan?
So Alan,
It's a good one.
It's a good one. Alan Love is here. And Alan's a good buddy of ours, and he's a magnificent Christian. And I don't know. Are there some Christians that are not too magnificent, you think?
I'd rather not comment.
Very
because,
good.
Let the Lord judge.
That's
very
it. That is
good.
A good now here's politically correct answer.
We have an attorney here. He knows how to cop, you know, get away from. Like we had Greg Fasula sitting here. He'd say, maybe. Getting a categorical statement out of an attorney is tough. Is it daylight out?
Well, could be.
Someplace. 1-888-221-8990. So this is a Team Martech Hour. We had a couple weeks off while we were raising, I forget the we thing, where Pastor Tom and Alan, Pastor Dave, and Karen.
Did they raise their money?
Pretty close.
Good, perfect.
Pretty close. But during the course of the year, other people will contribute money, and we contribute money.
So,
I mean, the shortfall was better than last year. So, but, you know, there are a lot of people that understand the importance of what this programming does.
Yeah.
1-888-221-8990. Team Martech started out doing radio shows back in about 2004. The reason I say about, because none of us can remember exactly when we did it, but we knew we had hurricanes around us while we were on the radio, so we assumed it was around that time. The concept was very simple, was to put together a group of local professionals who did not share commissions, who did not share fees, who did not share office space, who did nothing but help their individual clients, but all were experienced, had been in business a long time, and were there, in my not too humble opinion, were pretty much at the top of their field. So,
May I interrupt? We have a question from a
listener.
You're
going to interrupt my dissertation here?
I'm sorry.
He cut me right to the quick. Alan, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay.
What church do you preach at? I come in right in the middle of you. I'm gonna. Wait a minute.
This is from somebody important.
Before I say, I would probably invite you up to preach with me.
Joe. No wonder I'd be quiet. Yeah.
We had a young lady who called. She didn't want to come on the air, but she had a question that she missed. The filing, was it yesterday?
Yesterday was the last day to file.
And her taxes are still not finished. And so what she wanted to know is, should she file for an extension, and will the IRS charge her for late filing?
Well, the answer is yes. If she owes money, mm-hmm. there'd be a late. If she owes money, there'd be a late filing as well as a late paying penalty.
Okay.
Yes, you could. No, you cannot file an extension legally right
she's
now.
Late.
She's late. Because the only time you could do it, like in rare circumstances, like I've had two of them where we e-filed on time, but they got rejected for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah.
In those cases, we have like 5 days to clarify and to fix the reject and then send it back in. But if you have never sent in, you know, by midnight last night was the filing deadline.
But I think the key to her is, if she was paying her taxes out of a paycheck, let's say, and they withheld enough money to cover her tax liability, if she has no tax,
she's got a refund coming, or zero tax, then she doesn't have an issue.
She said the her material was in the hands of a tax preparer.
Okay,
I don't know what level of training.
Well,
whatever,
listen, you know,
There's
a lot of tax preparers, and I'm not going to besmirch their reputations.
I'll help you besmirch a couple, because I get a lot of phone calls from Joe. I went to a free tax service. They took one look at that thing and said, "We don't know what to do with that."
No, I've had the case where they have limited training, many of them, not all of them. You can't make a broad brush, and I don't want to demean them. Some of them are very qualified.
So the object is this: if she does not owe money, she's going to have to file regardless.
Right.
Now, if she's got money coming back, there's not going to be a penalty or interest or anything, because they owe her money. Well, and in fact, don't they actually accumulate some interest?
Depends. If the rule of thumb is, if you don't get your refund by May, the end of May, they will start to pay you interest.
They'll start to pay you
interest. But
let's say she waits a month to file. She's never going to get her refund probably in May, because this is almost May.
Right.
So that she may actually pick up $5 worth of interest by filing next week or 2 weeks from now, and then getting her refund in July or June or August or who knows when.
Rest assured that if she owes no money, then she doesn't really have a lot to worry about.
Now, let's just say she owes $500. Let's just use an example. And I hate to put you on the spot, but there's interest and penalty.
Yeah, it could be up to 0.5% a month on the late filing.
So 0.5% a month.
And then the other interest runs about a little less than 4% now.
A year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're looking at 0.25% interest and a 1-point penalty on $500. She might owe an extra $50.
Yeah, it depends on what her liability is.
If I'm using $500. So, and understand this, the Internal Revenue is not out to get her or to get mad. These are the rules. You fill in the blanks, and if you don't comply with the rules.
Actually, to tell you the truth, Joe, it's all electronic. It's done by software.
Yeah.
From their end.
So
they get it, they do the match, the calculation, the letters go out, boom.
Yeah.
You know?
But what I'm hearing you say, though, is regardless of whether she owes or they owe her, it's wisdom to move as fast as you can to get that filing.
Oh, that's absolutely right. Because if she owes money, she wants to pay it and keep the penalties to a minimum. If she's getting money back, then obviously you want to get it back
as soon as you
can. So it behooves her to get that thing moving real quick.
Okay, but as the part of her question, and you've answered that, is that it's too late to file for an extension.
She can't file an extension.
Here comes the next question. Now, you and I have seen this happen. Here's a person that didn't file for 5 years, but they had withholding and they had taxes paid and they were technically due a refund.
Mm-hmm.
But the Internal Revenue won't go back 5 years on a refund.
No.
How far back will they go?
They'll go back 3 years from the date that you filed, or 2 years from the date that you actually paid, if it's a case where you paid the tax.
Yeah.
Whichever is less.
So let's just say, here it is right now, and I didn't file for the last 3 years, but I paid in all the taxes that were due, and I'm technically due a refund on every one of them.
And if you never paid any money in, then
I paid in.
Besides the withholding. So I'm talking about you didn't make any You didn't write any
didn't
check.
Didn't have to make any additional.
Well, then they've got 3 years from the date that they filed the return. So, for example, now it's April 18. You're filing for 2016.
And
so you'd go 15. Back 3 years, right? So you would be 15, 14. So you'd be.
And they would then give me the interest. They would pay me my refunds for those 3 years.
Yes.
But
yes.
But if I didn't file for 5 years and they owed me money, I wouldn't get it for the other two.
It goes by the boards,
okay.
Unfortunately.
Well, you know, the rules are what the rules are.
And it's not right. From lack of trying. The IRS actually sends out or makes public announcements.
Yeah.
I think there's something like $1.3 billion of unclaimed tax
money.
Refunds.
Yeah.
I'd be willing to help take some.
Yeah, I know. Most of us would be very willing to help. Well, you know, they've got these websites too. In fact, every state, I think, has them for unclaimed money, bank accounts, whatever. Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't include this stuff.
It doesn't include internal revenue.
No, not the IRS. Those accounts you're talking about, it's like where people abandon bank accounts money in there, or somebody dies and they don't realize they have an account set up somewhere.
Yeah. They couldn't find them.
They couldn't find the people, or their heirs don't know that the account exists, so they don't know to claim it. And after a while, they get onto this unclaimed list, and then if you don't claim it within, I think, 3 years from when they announce it, then boom, you're done. It's the state's money then, or the feds.
Yeah, I had an old lady that I took care of, and I say that because I inherited her at age 80. Mm. Now, you know, Dave, sometimes you wonder why God does certain things to us. Have you ever wondered why?
I have a list.
Have a list. So I knocked on this door. This is in 1992, and a lady comes to the door, and she says, quote, "Thank God you're here." And I said, well, you know, I've been greeted pretty well before, but never quite that well.
Thank God you're here.
Yeah, thank God you're here. And I said,
she didn't know you that well.
Well, she could have said, thank Alan Love you're here. No, she didn't. No. So I said, well, I've been greeted well before, but never quite that well. I said, what's wrong? And she said, well, I need to have a prescription filled. And
what did you think? You were from the pharmacy?
I've got the money to fill it, but I can't drive. I broke both of my hips.
Ooh.
And my husband died. Would you do it? And I said, of course I will. So I go in and I'm talking to her, and I said, how much is the prescription? She goes, the prescription is $7.50. And I said, okay. And I said, and she says that I've got $7.65 in my checkbook. This was the 9th of September. You know how some things you never forget? The 9th of September. And I said, okay, so it's the 9th of September. You already got your Social Security check? She goes, oh yeah. And I said, you've got other money coming in for the rest of the month, don't you? And she goes, no. And I said, well, how do you eat? She goes, well, I get Meals on Wheels 5 days a week. And I said, well, what about the weekends? Well, they leave me extra on Friday for the weekends. And I said, okay, so you've got your Social Security check, right? She goes, oh yeah. And I said, how much is that? She goes, $350. Now, this was 1992. This is not that long ago. And I said, you can't live on that. She goes, I'm pretty good with a penny. Well, no kidding. She was really good with a penny. So I'm going to make this short story long, because one of my favorite stories. I say, you know what? When people say it's a true story, well, that means the rest of my stories are lies. And this is not when the people say that. This actually happened. So I said, I called the pharmacy, and the pharmacy said the prescription was for a diuretic. So I didn't think she was going to die overnight from not taking a diuretic. So I offered my wife, and I said, my wife is going to be here tomorrow, and we're going to straighten you out. Now, when I went home and told my wife, she said, I'll go right now. And I said, no, she's okay. So she went over the next day, and every day now for 2 weeks, she went and started putting groceries in the house and getting stuff organized and checking stuff out and doing whatever. Now, interesting lady. Her and her husband are from New York City, and I'm talking Manhattan.
Okay.
This woman had never in her life operated a washing machine. Well, in the city, everything is downstairs. You live in a cliff. You got a cleaners. You got a store. You got everything within one block of your house, basically. Right. So half of their meals were order in, order out. And laundry, there's no laundry even in the building. You drop stuff off, and they did laundry. So when they moved to Florida, her husband, they bought a little house, and he bought a washer, but not a dryer, because that was a waste of money. Almost sounds like an old Italian, right?
Yeah.
She was an old Italian.
Oh.
He was not. Anyway, So he did the laundry. She never did. She had never done laundry in her life.
Okay.
So then she's telling my wife she's never done laundry. My wife says, well, wait a minute. You have to wash stuff. She goes, well, I wash out my underwear in the sink, and I have 100 dresses. She was a seamstress. She had made 100 dresses, and she kept them in rotation. So that means basically in a whole year, she would wear the same dress 3 times. And this is going on. So I'm getting, you know, we're not really happy about this situation. So then you're going to love this part. When her husband died, she was in the hospital with a broken hip, and they had prepaid for their funeral. Now, you can prepay, you know, but they had prepaid for it 20 years before that. And it cost next to nothing when they prepaid for it. So when he died, the funeral home was thrilled that nobody showed. I mean, no cost. Yeah. Now, I have never heard of this happening in my entire life, but every funeral home I know of, and you know of, when a spouse dies, they automatically will go with the Social Security Administration and put the other spouse on the Social Security program because her husband's Social Security was higher than hers.
Right.
They didn't do it.
Oh.
They did not put her on his. Well, we immediately got her a $300 and some odd raise. She went from $350 a month to $600 and something a month. So,
how about the back pay?
Like 6 months.
That's all they'll
get. That's all they would go back with, 6 months. Yeah. Now, you only learn this the hard way. There's no school for this stuff. So now all of a sudden, she's, you know, things are looking good. So my wife's over there every day. One day she comes home with this file. And on the file it says CDs.
I have a feeling I know where this story is going.
You know where this is going.
Oh,
and these are not compact discs. This is before the compact disc. And my wife says, I don't know if these are any good. And I said, well, the way you can tell if they're any good, if there's some in the file, they're good. If there's nothing in the file, it's no good.
If there's nothing in the file, it's no good.
So she had roughly $100,000 in 6 month CDs at all different banks. And what her husband used to do was every 6 months he would shop different banks and pick up an eighth or a quarter,
That
was his thing. So I go back the next day with this file full of CDs. Her name was Virginia. And I said, Virginia, do you know you've got CDs? She goes, oh, yeah. I said, do you know how much money you've got in CDs? She goes, it's about $100,000. And I said, well, why didn't you cash one in for money? She goes, well, Ted said never to cash one in unless I really needed the money.
Wow.
Now, you had parents, and you had parents.
I believe that.
Depression era parents, their definition of need is dramatically different of today's.
Oh, yeah.
So I immediately said, come on, let's go for a ride. I took her downtown Stewart to Ocean Palms, which is on East Ocean, which is an adult retirement home. You have to be able to walk in and walk out, but it's got restaurant, bar. You're living in a hotel.
Okay.
I took her in there, and she just died and went to heaven because she's back in New York. Uh-huh. She's living in a hotel now. So she wants to go big time and live in this hotel. And she says, I don't know if I can afford it. How much is it? And I said, it's $1,500 a month. She goes, well, I can't afford that. And I says, well, here's the deal. We can take this $100,000 worth of CD and we can get you a life income. You'll get a check every month for the rest of your life, and with your Social Security, you're going to be around $2,500 a month. That'll give you $1,000 more a month than you need to live here. And she goes, when can I move? And I said, okay, now here's the deal with this. If we do the life income, now folks, for those of you that have never heard of this, this is called a SPIA. It's an immediate annuity. Single premium, mean they pay for it once, immediate annuity, which says I give the insurance company money. The insurance company now gives me a check for the rest of my life. But they have wrinkles you can put in. We can give you a check like retiring from a big company for the rest of your life, but if you get one check and you die the next day, the money's gone.
Right.
Or you can put in a wrinkle called guarantee me a 10-year, so if I die, somebody keeps getting it for at least 10 years. Or you can put a spouse in, they get the same benefit. Each time you add a wrinkle, the amount of the check goes down.
Right.
Now, being a tough New York Italian she was, she said, I have no family, I have no children, nobody. It's just me. And I told her about the wrinkles where she could add, and she goes, I don't want anybody getting a dime. Does this sound like the old Italian to you?
Yeah, so, as long as they were alive, they weren't giving up
they
anything.
They weren't giving up anything. She goes, nothing. And I said, okay, that means if you died, nobody's going to get anything. She goes, right. I don't want anybody getting a dime. Now, so she moves into this place. She is one happy camper. She's in there about 3-4 months, and I get this phone call from New York.
Uh-oh. Somebody's looking for money.
A sister. A sister. And she's telling me it's Virginia's sister. And I said, wait a minute. Virginia told me she had no family. She goes, well, Virginia's not the most honest person on earth. She's the oldest of six. Mm. And we really don't get along. I'm the only one that talks to her. And I said, really? And I said, you know, I'm really not happy with your family because she was in pretty bad shape down there living by herself, even though she didn't know she was in bad shape. She goes, Joe, you don't understand what we've gone through. And I says, well, but she also told me that members of her family took her piano and took other things. And she goes, well, not everybody in a family is good people. So this goes on. So she says, Virginia says she moved. And I said, yeah, that's true. And she says, you're helping her. And I said, that's true. And she said, place sounds pretty nice that she moved to. And I said, it is. Sounds expensive. It's not. How much does it cost?
Mm.
I said, it costs $1,500 a month. And she goes, well, how can Virginia afford that? She says. And I said, she can. She said, you know, I think what we need to do, we need to come down and meet you.
Mm-mm.
Okay. So a date is planned. I had an office down in Palm Beach. Wife drives Virginia down. I have a conference room. I'm meeting whatever. I show up in the conference room, and there's everybody sitting there with their hands folded. Nobody's saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I start to introduce myself. And I walk around with my hand out to say, hi, I'm... And the brother-in-law says, okay, how much money does Virginia have?
Whoa, right to the point.
Bam. So it was...
And when do you think we'll be getting it?
Three sisters and a brother-in-law, Virginia and my wife and me. Nobody's saying a word. And I said, Virginia, you want to tell him? She goes, nope. I says, well, I'm going to tell him. And she goes, you can, but I'm not going to. And I said to this guy, I said, Virginia had $100,000.
Like in past tense.
If I could have warbled the D, I would have, you know how that people can do that warble thing on a D. Had $100,000. She now has a life income, and she's going to get about $2,500 a month for the rest of her life. And he goes, what happens when she dies? And I said, nobody gets a dime. Everybody stood up and left.
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding you.
They all got up and left.
They all got up and left.
A bunch of greedy so and so. Isn't that something else?
Well, the story evolves. So then, after a year there, they evicted her.
Oh, why?
They didn't call it eviction. They said wouldn't renew her lease because one day she went out and she forgot where she lived.
Oh.
So this is one of those places you have to be walking in and out of. They don't lock the doors or anything. So now I said, okay, fine. I'm going to take her to an assisted living. So I take her to the best assisted living I can find up in Port St. Lucie, whose name I'm not going to use on the radio because I don't want them assuming. But let me just tell you, it's a classy joint.
Okay.
And it costs $2,500 a month, which is about her income. But I figure, hey, so big deal. But this one they lock and they have the nurse and, you know, meals and it's classy looking and all that. And she goes in and everything is pretty cool. Then one day I get a phone call. I have to go meet the head nurse. Mm-hmm. So I go in and meet Nurse Ratchet.
Nurse Ratchet.
And Nurse Ratchet's got her blouse open up here and she's showing her chest. I mean, you know, no skin, nothing improper. And you can see three boom, boom, boom bruises. And she goes, oh, Virginia did that to me. And I said, really? What happened? She goes, whatever I said, she didn't like it. I think she has Alzheimer's. And last week, she nailed somebody with her cane in the dining room. Now, what happened is, and Vince, I know you would never believe this, but this was a nasty New Yorker.
Really?
Can you
believe? There are no nasty New Yorkers.
Right? This lady could outcuss any truck driver.
Oh,
she was a supervisor for Western Union over almost all men. And she was a little tiny, 5'2", 105 pounder. So, you know, this is back before the day of sexual harassment and stuff. So she was one tough lady.
She had to be.
Oh. So she nailed somebody with her cane, and I take her to the doctor. Doctor says, yeah, looks like Alzheimer's to me. You know, these mood swings. they put her on a drug called Meloril, and it sounds and is just what it sounds like. 6 months goes by. She goes from being able to walk the whole mall with a cane. The only reason she had the cane is because she had broken both hips, but both successful surgery, that she couldn't get across the room with a walker.
Mm.
And I said to the nurse, I said, what's the story? She goes, well, she's old. She's dying. That's what happens. They get Alzheimer's and they die. And I said, you know, it doesn't make sense to me that she was healthy, no drugs, just because she's 80, now she's 81. It shouldn't make any difference. So I just, one day, I said, okay, I've had it. And I took her out and we left.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you're violating the lease. And I said, tough, we'll sue you. I said, good, I can't wait to go to court. So then I take her to her home, my house. I think this is what cost me my divorce. And I did an exercise routine with the three of us every day, three times a day, took her off the drug, and within 2 months I had her walking the mall again with a cane. So then I take her to the doctor and I said, Alzheimer's, huh? I said, Virginia, stand in the middle of the room there on 1 foot. She does. I said, jump up and down on 1 foot. She does. And I said, Alzheimer's, huh? To the doctor, and he goes, doesn't look like it to me. And I said, wait a minute, how can you make a diagnosis? And he goes, look it, I see her for 5 or 10 minutes. The nurse saw her, all the symptoms were there. We're wrong. I'll see you in 6 months.
That was really comforting.
Comforting. Mm. Now there's an, I'm coming to the end of the story. So she lived with me for 9 months. I was never forgiven for this because she did not like women. She was one, nasty, didn't like women. Men are in charge. That's the ones you have to be nice to, but not women. She had the old school. She was old school. So then I then took her to other assisted livings. I ended up with three more before I found the right one. I found a mom and pop, got licensed. They were magnificent people, had a private home. I got them all of their, I call them inmates over the years from my client base. I had two other clients that had Alzheimer's, and I had them move into there because these are magnificent people, magnificent people. Well, 10 years goes by and she dies slowly. She didn't have Alzheimer's. She had dementia, slow. Okay. So now she's 90. She never forgot me, which is an amazing thing because I'm telling you, only because I was a man, and that's the only reason. She forgot everybody else, but she dies. I call her sister in New York, and I said, Virginia died. She goes, oh, Joe, you'll take care of everything, right? And I said, yeah, I always have. And she goes, okay, thanks.
You'll take care of everything. So you have to bury her, too.
Of course. So then, 3 months or 6 months or 5 months goes by, and I get a letter in the mail from Metropolitan Life Insurance.
Oh.
She had life insurance.
Holy cow.
So I call Metropolitan, and I said, hey, I'm power of attorney. How do I get the money? And they said, you can't have it. And I said, why? It can only go to a blood relative. And the beneficiary she had named already had died.
Oh.
So now it had to go to a blood relative.
Oh, boy.
So I called the sister. I called the sister in New York, and I said, Virginia had life insurance. She goes, really? She goes, how much she have? I said, about $20,000. She goes, really? And she goes, who gets it? And I said, you do. She goes, really?
When do I get the check?
When do I get it? And I said, well, here's the deal. You're going to have to call Greg Fasula, attorney, and he'll help you do the paperwork and get it. Really? Yeah, so I called Greg. Now, folks, this is not my finest hour, what I did.
Mm-mm.
But I have not regretted it for 1 second. I called Greg and I said, Greg, this is probably the worst family I have ever seen in my whole life. And I took care of this lady for 10 years and I cannot have any of the money. And it's going to go to her sister, which upsets me. I want you to charge $1,000 to help her. He goes, Joe, that's too much. And I said, tough. I don't care. And she'll be thrilled to get $19,000 instead of $20,000, which Greg did. You know, quite honestly, I felt at least a little redemption that somebody got something out of this. And this.
Yeah, well, he worked for it, though. He was entitled to it.
Well, of course he was. Point I was trying to get to is things happen. And you know what happens, Alan, in our lifetime, when you get to be old like you and I,
Ah, you mean he didn't include
me in
it
this
time.
We don't look as old as Vince and Pastor Dave, Vince. but you end up with experiences that almost,
so we're all the old guys.
that other people just don't have. But you, being a pastor, Dave, have gone through one time after another with people dying and helping them go through, besides counseling with all kinds of stuff.
Definitely.
So, is there a course in the world that would teach you about these things? Now, here is the key about life insurance. Anybody that's got life insurance, double check your beneficiaries. Make sure you're up to date, because you can change those beneficiaries till the day you die or the day you're incompetent.
Right.
If you get fried, you're out to lunch, you can't change anything. But you can change them until. Because I have had more than one client that didn't die and everybody else did, and they had life insurance. Mm. And if you don't put it going to your church or putting it to somebody, they've got to find a blood relative. And that's who's going to get it. So that isn't always what they want. And she certainly, if Virginia would have been rolling over in the grave if she knew her sister got that money.
Wow.
But that was just it.
So now she died, but she collected that $2,500 a month for the rest of her life, right?
Until she died.
Ten years.
Okay. Now, the insurance company lost, because in the system, they don't expect her to live that long. And they put, the actuarial tables, how they put it together to calculate how much she's going to get. So she won, and she got to live. Was well taken care of.
All right.
Was well taken care of.
So that was a good investment for her.
Well, it was. It worked out. It worked out real well. But there was parts of the story that I've always loved, and it's the part that the family, except for the last minute, didn't get any of the money from her. They didn't. So that made me kind of happy. But the fact was, my wife did say, "Please, Joe, don't bring home another." But you wonder, Dave, when you knock on a door, you never know when it's your turn. And God says, "Hey, guess what, Joe?
Yeah, you have to step in.
What are you
going to
do? What could you do at that moment? You know,
step up to the plate.
We have no choice.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess you do, but I didn't. Then my wife says, "Okay, you can get a state-appointed guardian." And I said, "You know, that guardian will suck up most of that money, because the state fees that are all allowed, and that lady is going to be in worse trouble, because it's terribly onerous, the system." We have lived. I think most of us here have lived and watched what the system does. Even though it's legally proper, it's not the right thing to do for people if you can avoid it. Anyway, so much for Joe's story.
Phone number alert here.
Definitely.
The number to call us, 888-221-8990. Please call us if you have a question. Joe, how about switching gears from certainty, that $2,500 a month income, to uncertainty? And the last 3 weeks, especially in the markets, we've seen the markets sort of go the other way, from almost straight up to not straight down, but it's been slowly coming down. And
it's eroding, we might say.
Yes, eroding. And the media loves the word uncertainty.
Yeah, yep.
And really, what they mean by that, in short, is that the markets are trying to figure out what's going to happen in the future. The markets usually anticipate what's going to happen in the economy 3 to 6 months
even
in
up to a year.
And sometimes up to a year. Yeah. And the markets now are a little bit confused, because we don't know what tax policy is going to wind up. We don't know about health care. There are elections going on in France in the next couple of weeks that are going to affect things.
Also in Great Britain in June.
We got all kinds of problems. Now, there's always problems. But what happened was, when the current president got elected, we called it the Trump bump. The enthusiasm was there to think that maybe the economy was going to get dramatically better, because he promised a dramatically better economy. And most of us are somewhat optimistic about life, and we were looking and saying, maybe he can pull this off. Well, 100 days into it, he hasn't really accomplished much, but let me tell you, he's learning what it is to be a politician and the fight he has internally. So it's going to be interesting. But what Alan was alluding to was this. Most people that understand the stock market today would say, if they are being extremely open-minded, would say, it's fairly priced. Now, that's being very, very kind. Most of us on the other side, meaning Alan, I guarantee you, Vince, and Joe, would say the market is overpriced. They use a P.E. ratio. Alan knows it, you know it, Vince, which is a price-to-earnings ratio. And using the market currently, the way it stands, the P.E. ratio is pushing 20. 10 is considered the proper number. The lower the number is considered better. The higher number is considered poor. Now, that doesn't mean that every company that has a P.E. ratio of 20 or 30 or 40 is a bad investment, but it also means that their earnings don't justify their current price. So what they're doing is projecting 3 months, 6 months, a year in advance that the economy will get better and the company will grow to justify its price.
Well, so what you're saying, Joe, is if it's PE, which is price over earnings,
right,
and if it's 10, whatever the number is, you're saying that it's going to take 10 times or 10 years of earnings to match what you're paying for that company.
Just about. Not when it's priced at 20 times.
So 20 times earnings?
It's even more difficult. But what happens is people, again, anticipating, and the market has been driven up based on enthusiasm and a recovery. And now what's happening, enthusiasm is waning a bit. A bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still hopefully enthusiastic or hopefully optimistic, but I really am becoming more pragmatic or more maybe somewhat realistic, thinking that the boy that's running our country right today is going to get a few sharp sticks in the eye, because the system is set that you can't be a dictator, and he's trying to pull this thing off for the benefit of our country, I believe, but it's not happening quickly. So if the economy hums along at this 1-2% gross domestic growth, it won't justify the price of the market. Now, most people then predict that the market will correct, meaning take a good hit. Could go down 10%, 5%, 20%, and then it'll slowly come back again. Is that going to happen? Nobody sitting here knows. Nobody sitting here knows. But here comes the question that we were leaning to, Alan, is when you and I sit here with a client, and I talk to clients of mine today, I said, you know, short-term money, I wouldn't even remotely be concerned about being in the market. I personally don't think it's a good idea. Long-term, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, market will take care of itself probably. Mostly always has, right?
Right.
What's the S&P 500 average for the last 20, 30, 40 years?
About 10.5% per year growth.
Now,
it has extreme ups and downs. And we were talking before the show about what happened in 2009. If you remember, in January of 2009, the market almost went straight down every day. And
yep.
There were people coming on the media saying that the banking system may not survive like that. But you've got to realize nobody can predict the extremes of the market.
No.
But one thing you can predict is the effect of human emotion on the market. And there was one event on March 9th of 2009 that turned things around. And that event was the fact that Friday, when the market closed on March 6th, Citicorp reported Monday morning their earnings, and surprisingly, they showed a small profit. That was totally unexpected. But what that did is that set the floor in the market, and the market started the long uptrend
after a pretty severe downturn.
Yeah, that for the most part we've seen just take in the last 8 years, going right on the Dow from 6,600 to 21,000. Which was a tremendous move.
So what we're trying to say is, back again, there's nothing wrong with the stock market. The stock market has done a magnificent job for an awful lot of people, for their savings, their 401ks, because, you know, you put your money in the bank, you make 0.5% or 1%, or if you're lucky, 1.5%. And a lot of people, especially retirees, say they have $100,000 retired savings, and they put it in a bank, and they get a check for $1,000 a year. That doesn't supplement their Social Security very well. So where Alan was going with this is, what's my prediction, Joe Martex? Mine is, I have none. All I'm saying is I'm worried, but I'm not overly pessimistic, because the economy is humming along, not at breakneck speed, but it is not going negative. It is basically staying pretty flat. Okay, we don't have, in my opinion, a bubble of any form. Real estate is still a bargain for used real estate. When we had the bubble before, all of a sudden the price of used real estate was higher than new. Well, that's the wrong thing. Banking industry right today, interest rates are extremely low. You can get financing for a house extremely low. There's nothing overly wrong. Now, there might be regulatory problems. We all, Vince and I, you know, poor Vince, you got a simplified tax code with 70,000 pages.
As long as there are lawyers writing these bills,
yeah, it'll keep adding.
It'll never be simplified.
So the concept is this. When I talk to somebody today about investing in the market, normally I said, hey, listen, I would prefer to show you a relatively conservative approach, and then you tell me if that is something that makes sense to you. I said, we always down the road can get more aggressive. Always can. I mean, that's the easy thing to do. But you know, Alan, every time I've seen people get more aggressive, it's too late. Have you ever noticed when everybody's euphoric because everything is doing well, then they all want to jump in at the top?
Well, you know, on the internet today, there are thousands of different trading systems that you can look at, and some of the pitches they attract you, like I made X amount of money in 2 months or whatever.
I know.
And you know, I 98% of my trades were successful. The thing that I always would advise my clients is try the system out, paper trade it for 6 months to a year
with no money.
If you've made a paper profit and you've beaten the conservative approach, fine. Then take a small portion of your assets and do it for real. And if you continue to do that, fine. That way, you'll find out that most of the time, the conservative approach, as you talked about many times on the show, the annuities that give you part of the market upside without the risk on the downside, those are great investments for most people.
I get a kick out of all of these different concepts, and I get these commercials, and there's one particular company, a name I'm not going to mention again too, and the main guy for that company is only under a federal indictment, but not a big deal. But anyway, and one of the recent, not too long ago, I'm going to call it a scam, was they could piggyback Canadian Social Security.
Oh, I heard.
You remember that one?
I remember that scam.
You remember that one?
That's still around.
Oh, yeah.
That's still around.
I'm not hearing it much. Now, what happened, I had a client of mine, mother and daughter. They got a few bucks. And the daughter says, well, Joe, I think I'm going to do this with my $50,000. She goes, I can get $1,500 a month and getting into this thing. And I said, $1,500 a month, really? I said, how can you do that? She goes, well, this Canadian Social Security system, that's what I can get from it. And I said, uh-huh. So you're talking about $17,000-$18,000 a year on $50,000. You're talking a 35-40% return. Does that make any sense to you that you can get 35 or 40%? She goes, it does sound like pretty good, doesn't it? And I says, yeah, sounds like it's better than pretty good. I said, do you know what the actual return is on the Canadian Social Security system? She goes, no. And I said, it's 4%. That's the actual return. Now, they do better than ours. The Canadians are brighter than we are, as far as I'm concerned, because they make something. But there ain't no 40%.
We have nothing to invest, Joe. What are you talking about?
Minor thing. Well, yeah, but we have smoke and mirrors. So
we have nothing, but we're making money, right?
We have a $20 trillion. Look at the deficit.
Does Canada have a real trust fund?
I don't know how it works exactly, but my study, when I was trying to find out for this client so that they didn't feel overly ridiculous by not doing this, and I didn't want them to think it was in my best interest because I wasn't going to make any money on it. I'm just trying to help them, and I didn't want to see them taken advantage of. Yeah. And what Vince was saying, and Alan, every day in the newspaper, on the internet, hey, I made 350%, and it's easy. Just buy my book. What's the old saying, Dave? Those that can't teach.
No, those that can do. Those that can't teach. But that's really putting down teachers, and that's not right either, Jeff.
Well, that doesn't mean the teachers didn't want to be a teacher, though. They may never have tried to go do. You understand? A teacher is a teacher. A preacher is a teacher.
That's right. Listen, a teacher is a preacher.
A teacher is a preacher. Oh. preachers are teaching.
You just unearthed my secret.
I know. The whole thing that
we're called didactic.
The whole thing that I'm trying to say when it comes to people investing money, we're going to have to look at the goal, what we're trying to accomplish, and how much time we've got.
Right.
And then you have to understand your risk. So my job is to educate. It just seems like all of a sudden in the last few weeks, and maybe because of this show, I've had people concerned about existing 401ks, 403bs, mm-hmm. retirement accounts.
Right.
Now, I've seen in the last few weeks people that have left their employer and were gone for 10 years and never did anything with the retirement account that was sitting there and didn't understand it. And when they called up their ex-employer and talked to the people, that made it worse. They couldn't understand it. And then they said, I'm trying to get the money out of them. And 6 months later, they quit trying to get the money out of them because the paperwork was onerous. Now, guys like me, even though the paperwork is onerous, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. I help people make that transition from A to B. And most of these people are holding the money, are not holding it because they're nasty people. It's the rules of that particular system that makes it very difficult for people to get it.
You bring up an interesting point. I've got a question about that for either you or Vince. Let's say somebody doesn't contact their former employer and they get on the phone a number of years later. And the reason they get on the phone is they're trying to contact the employer because they heard on the news that the employer just filed for bankruptcy.
Right, right.
Is that pension money protected in some way, or is it lost if that would happen?
Well, you're probably better answer this. I mean, there is insurance for
what happened
the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp oversees all these
some
plans.
Years ago there was very little or no protection, but then because of abuses they did put in some guarantee funds to protect what's going on. Now, I am not an expert on how these things work, and I'm not an expert if this pension fund happens to be 10 years old, 20 years old, 30 years old, 40 years old.
1976, Joe.
Is that when?
Actually, sorry, 1974, when ERISA came about.
There you go.
And that's when they brought that in.
So, but I do know there are, let's take a few major company bankruptcies, like Enron. A lot of the employers own stock in the company and had it in their pension fund. Well, guess what? They lost all that money.
Yeah, well, the value of the stock went to zero.
Yep. Now, if there was an approved pension fund managed by an outside source, and that pension fund is bound by certain rules to be conservative in the investment, that money probably was okay in spite of the company going broke, because in theory, that's an outside source managing and holding that money. It's not being held by the employer. So the whole thing that 90% of the people out there don't understand is exactly how these systems work and what they're invested in. I look at some of these investments that are in certain 401ks and 403bs, and they have weird systems called age-ranged investments that they're automatically put into a certain investment based on how old they are.
Right.
And that's the system.
Age-weighted.
Is that make it good, bad, or indifferent? That's a very good question. Nobody knows
unless
start collecting.
But unless it's automatic, Joe. Yeah. So it's got to be automatic. When you reach a certain age, they convert those investments to something else.
Yeah.
If it's automatic, you can see the logic in it.
But however, does that always make it right?
No.
Like, let's just talk, Alan, how many times do we talk about bond funds today? When interest rates go up, bonds go down. Well, guess what's happening? Now interest rates are going up, so used to be the old rule, the older you get, the more money went into bonds, which also has become a system that isn't necessarily right. Now, I argue constantly with bond fund companies that are always knocking on my door, say, Joe, we want you to do business with us. Actively managed bond fund or bond traders that are dealing in high yield bonds and or foreign bonds sometimes can do much better. But I'm talking, this is high tech stuff.
But it's also riskier.
Oh, man. But it's also, if you have these professional managers that are hot stuff, that know their stuff, they have good track records, sometimes 10, 15 years long. Okay, now I'm starting to feel better. Mm-hmm. They've got good credentials.
Mm-hmm.
Is it still make you comfortable? Good question. So my whole thing is today, the instruments that I look at mostly for people that are looking for safety are debt instruments and or Alan was saying, an annuity contract, which is a contract with an insurance company that lets them say if the market goes up, they make, but they have guarantees to protect them for income and death benefits so that they're protected. So different company. Now, you got to be concerned. My compliance people say, I've got to say, you've got to be concerned with the strength of the company, their claims paying ability. So guys like me and Alan, we only deal with the highest rated companies, period, because we just don't want to fool around with any problems. But the reality is, when I talk to almost anybody today, I am not overly optimistic about what the economy is going to do or the market's going to do in the next or the near future. So I'd rather, you know, Alan, is the thing. I ask people, can you be satisfied with 5 or 6% return? And say, oh yeah. And I said, okay, now stay with that thought and let's stay in that 5 or 6% number. And then maybe a year from now, let's visit it again, or 6 months or every 6 months, and see if it might be in your best interest to move a portion of that into something that might do better. But we want to have the variables, understand the variables better. Making sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Pastor Dave?
Oh, I'm with you 100%.
I like Pastor Dave. He placates me all the time. Go. That was nice of you.
You know, one of the differences is Joe and Vince, when we were growing up, there was such a demand for things like automobiles, houses, things like that, that it was a no-brainer that the economy was going to grow. But now we're in a situation where technology in certain industries is taking away jobs.
Yeah, big time.
And that is something that the younger generation has to be aware of, that we have to find ways of creating viable jobs for younger people, but yet making technology better to improve the life of all of us. And the catch 22 that we're in at the moment.
And not everybody's going to be building the robots.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely not everybody's going to be the techie genius.
Right.
You know, but the key is this. Our job is not to change things. Our job is to adapt. You know, we are grains of sand in the scope of things in this whole ocean. So what we do is say, hey, this is reality. How do we address reality today and do the best we can for our clients or our friends or relatives or neighbors, just to try to do the best we can? Now, when a person comes to see me, and every once in a while I get a very young person, and they said, hey, I've only got $10,000. I'm never going to get rich on $10,000. I don't want to be in that 5 or 6% thing. I said, fine, we can move a little more aggressively. I'm not against that. But you have to understand that you're going to sign a piece of paper saying you understand you're going to be more at risk. And that's okay.
I had a client of mine that's talking about that. I think that drives to the point about suitability.
Jim. Right.
All right. Suitability. Because I had a client of mine that bought an annuity, but he couldn't afford to pay the premium on the, or the payment. There's a payment. He was buying into it, but there was an accumulation phase.
Yeah, right.
And he was paying in the accumulation phase and then couldn't pay it anymore. And then all of a sudden he lost $40,000. They penalized him.
Well, that doesn't make any sense to me. But
this is what he told me. And so he said he's hiring an attorney.
Okay.
To go after the broker dealer,
see,
because the obviously wasn't suitable if he can't afford
it. You know what that sounds like to me?
What?
That sounds like variable life insurance.
Could have been.
You know what happens? If you know, we've heard of this, Alan, right?
Yes, we have.
And what happens is, an annuity contract puts together the insurance company on one side and an investment on the other.
Okay.
Okay. It's always your money.
And it was an MEC contract, was what I understood.
So now, insurance company comes up and says, Vince, I'm going to insure your life for $1 million, and we're going to get $500 a month out of you for a premium. But what's going to happen is that $500 is going to grow like crazy because it's going to be in the market, and you're never going to have to pay for all that insurance because it's going to pay for itself. And then you can borrow this money back out, stick it in your pocket, and go to Europe and have a good time.
Okay.
If.
But what happens?
If the market doesn't collapse, if. So all of a sudden, if he's paying this premium in for this monster piece of life insurance and he doesn't, and the market's not performing, all of a sudden, not only did he lose his money, but he lost his life insurance because he can't afford to make the premium payment.
Right, exactly.
So I do not like variable life insurance.
That's probably what it is.
A great example is what if you bought that policy before 2008 and 2009?
Yeah.
You were probably cooked.
Point is, I don't like things like that.
But what happens to the money? What caused you to lose it? You're paying premiums, so a portion of it goes to the life insurance. I get that.
Well, what he did was he wasn't paying enough to cover the cost of just the life insurance because he was supposed to be. See, do you think every salesman is honest?
No.
Well, that was pretty hard, wasn't it? So literally what happens is the salesman painted this rosy picture of everything in the world's going to go up and hallelujah, we're going to make millions of dollars. And I'm exaggerating. But the reality was there wasn't enough money coming in to cover the cost of the life insurance.
So what were they doing? Taking the money out of this so-called investment account?
And paying the premium.
Paying the premium.
Yes.
And so if that, that's going down. That fund is going down.
So let's say he put $40,000 into this account up front. Let's just say, and I've seen people do that, and X number goes for insurance and X money's in investment. Well, all of a sudden, the investment collapses and the payments still go on for the insurance.
Got it. So now what happens when you terminate those things? Now, what causes him?
You run out of money to pay for the life
insurance. So there's nothing in that. There's nothing in the fund anymore.
Nope.
So the money you put up front is cottage.
You got to pay for the life insurance.
Wow.
You know, now, I don't like those kind of, and I think a lot of people, ton of people, these were sold as investments, which you should not do. There's a lot of people that bought those that heard what we're saying here, that, you know, they're going to make and it's an investment and you're in good shape. And I personally, when these people say you can buy life insurance as an investment, I say no. There's no such thing. You buy life insurance to protect you in case you die on the wrong time, but to think you're going to save money with it, yeah, you can overpay for life insurance and a portion will go into a savings account.
Right.
But if they put it into an investment account and you're in the market and the market collapses, you can lose your money.
You lose your money.
So yeah. I do not like those type of plans.
Got it. And they're called variable life policies.
Variable life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Now, a variable annuity, they can put insurance guarantees in there. It's got nothing to do with paying for life insurance. If the account in the market does better, hallelujah, you won big time. But if it does worse, the insurance company says, hey, we're still going to guarantee you the income for life, or we'll guarantee your family in case you die.
Right.
Not forget in case. When?
When you die, right. When you die.
There's no in case.
But you can guarantee one end or the other, but not both.
Yeah. You can't guarantee that it's going to go up, but you can say, hey, the insurance company says, we are going to stand by this thing and protect you in case.
Yeah. But if you have no money to pay premiums,
there is no premium. It's a single premium paid in one time.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
All right. That would have been a better deal for him.
He would have had
the life insurance.
You ever heard of this insurance company that's got the rock as a symbol?
Yeah.
And I got this guy I know put $30,000 in, you know, and he's protected for life, no matter what, for life. It's amazing.
Shall we continue this next week?
Oh, I think we should, because it's an interesting topic.
We'll continue this next week because we got 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Well, God bless you all out there, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, I got 15 seconds left.
You got
plenty of time. You can cure the ills of the world.
Not me.
Hey, thank you so much for nobody calling us, which I didn't like.
No, we had one caller not on the air.
I know, but only
one. We had, but it was not on the air, right.
Anybody wants to talk to us during the course of the week, you call the radio station. Pastor Tom, Dave, or Karen will take your name and number. We'll call you back. 1-888-221-8990. Adios.
You've been listening to the Team MarTech program. The Team MarTech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF MarTech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team MarTech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team MarTech is available at 772-678-7725.
dwells in the shelter.